Chapter 46.
What is this?
Con Arthur demanded.
You said nothing about this.
This? Kip asked. What are you mad about? And why are you bringing it to me right now? The sun was rising on another perfect morning on the Great River. According to their guides, they were about 5 minutes from Fachin Island. There they would rendezvous with the Cooney War.
You were supposed to take care of this,
Con Arthur said, pointing at Tisis. Easy, Cruxa warned. The Mighty's skimmer, already small with 9 people on it, especially when that 9 included men the size of Big Leo, Kip, and Con Arthur, felt downright minuscule when the Big Bear was angry.
I was planning to, Tisis said.
How?
He demanded.
I hadn't figured that out yet, Tisis said. I was kind of hoping we'd have a chance for you to show how useful...
Shit.
Whoa, 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 Kip said. You have to tell...
Ah, shit, Con Arthur said. There's their scout. They've seen us. Now we're committed.
Kip couldn't see anyone until he flickered his vision to sub-red and saw the warm blotch in the trees along the riverbank. Slow down to half speed, Kip ordered. It's, only polite to give them a chance to prepare for our arrival. He turned to Con Arthur and Tisis. You've got 10 minutes.
The Cooney War, Con Arthur said. You never told us we were meeting with a Cooney War.
I wasn't hiding it, Kip said. I told you we saved 200-some men. Why do you care?
I thought the last conflict between you was 100 years ago, Tisis said.
That's because we haven't wanted to be slaughtered again. We've had to live so we can disappear at any moment for any amount of time. When we hear they're coming to the Grove in force, we'll leave and stay away until they lose interest.
Bitterly, he said,
it's another reason they call us ghosts.
Wait, Kip said, why do they hunt you?
You should have told him, the Con said.
Below him, Shabeel was rubbing her face.
I was going to tell him, Tisis shot back, when the time was right. Apparently you thought you'd take that decision out of my hands.
You didn't think you could keep it from him forever, did you?
The Con said.
I wanted to give you a chance to prove your worth. The Chromeria is more than a little nervous. What is this about? Kip demanded. Now!
Shady Grove isn't separate from the Chromeria simply because some drafters want to stay in Blood Forest, the Con said, mountainous shoulders slumping. We're will casters.
So what? Kip said.
So what?
The Con was baffled.
I thought you'd be angry, Tisis said. I thought that if they showed how incredibly useful their powers can be.
I'm angry. I'm angry you kept something from me that you thought would make me mad. That absolutely infuriates me. We'll talk about that later. Kip remembered the fear accorded to Tyr's use of Parol. Parol was scary, and it didn't fit nicely into the Chromeria's septophiliac teachings. He could easily imagine the same happening to other slightly divergent teachings, but will casting? He'd used it himself against Grasna, and been told only not to try that so early in his drafting career. What was the big deal? Shabeel Shofra said,
We hoped to show you how we use a partner in battle to help explain, but the skimmers travel so quickly they couldn't catch up.
A partner? What was... Tisis turned to Shabeel.
I don't suppose the Third Eye said anything about what we're supposed to do now?
No. Shabeel's face was impossible to read, maybe a little tightening around the eyes, but the smile not moving. That was unnerving. Luckily, the he-bear of a Con was far more expressive. His already pale face went pasty, his fists clenched, and Kip could actually see the tight thews of his shoulders swell with sudden tension.
Kip, Tisis said, do you remember when you were going through your Blackguard initiation, and you grabbed that boy's open Luxin spear and shattered it?
How do you know about that? Kip asked.
Balls, Kip. You think the Blackguard trainees do anything in the Chromeria that isn't immediately grist for the rumour mills?
Kip hadn't really thought about it, but he supposed that the attractive, powerful young men's and women's fights would be fairly intriguing to the average drafter who never got to raise a fist in anger, much less throw a Luxin missile.
Grasna was his name, he said.
Commander Ironfist called it willjacking.
Right. Willjacking is one tiny part of will casting, Tisis said.
Shit,
said Kraxa, who had just come up to join them. I can't believe I didn't put the pieces together. Willcasters! That's why Shabeel's with you. That's her people's magic.
To Kip, Tysis interjected.
Willcasters draft only enough Luxin to transmit their will, to objects and to animals.
And to people, Kraxa said.
Not to people, Shabeel said quickly. Not in the sense you mean.
Kraxa interrupted.
Forcing your will onto a person, making them do whatever you want? It's mind rape, and often a precursor to actual rape. That's what I was taught. Are you saying it isn't used that way?
A frisson passed through the nearby boats, and Kip was keenly aware that Kraxa had just equated 100 nearby drafters with rapists. Everyone in the boats within earshot went very quiet and very tense.
It can be used that way, Shabeel admitted.
And animals, his mouth twisted. Uniting with an animal. Forcing yourself on an innocent animal. It's like...
It's a terrible thing to call good evil, Shabeel interrupted. Horny, shamed zealots often see perversity in innocent activities. Men like that would describe a mother changing her son's soiled nappy as stripping an infant naked and rubbing his genitals. It's true, but it's misleading. When a man sees perversity everywhere, one must question who's the pervert. I'd hate for you to become a person like that, Commander.
Kraxa looked as if he'd been slapped.
Yet even a shamed, imperfect man might actually find himself among those who pervert the gifts Orholm has given them.
It was a step back, but the crowd of Willcasters didn't see it that way. They moved from vindication to surly outrage in an instant. Point to Kraxa, but maybe this wasn't an argument worth winning. Kip felt as if he were watching a team of runaway horses pulling a heavy-laden cart down a crowded street. Perhaps disaster couldn't be averted forever. But Shabeel held her hand up.
Willcasting is a sword. Like any sword, it is meant to cut and kill. It is an implement, mostly, of violence and ugliness. It is a sword we here carry with an appreciation for the dangers of the blade. Surely you warriors can understand this. We do not disagree about how vile are the abuses of this craft.
Except the Chromeria says all uses of your craft are abuses, Kraxa said.
Kraxa, Kip said, you know I love you, but shut your gob.
Shabeel?
She looked down the river nervously, but they were still quite a ways out.
Your magisterium draws its edicts in such a way as to keep as many people safe as possible. It would ban swords altogether, so as to save us all from those who use swords to rape and steal and kill. But there is a time to kill and a place to use every weapon at our disposal. Is now the time and place for you, Kip Kyle, who said he would lead us to kill and to die?
I take it that the Cunny War disagree, he said.
The Cunny War are liars and hypocrites, Conarthur said, hot. They claim to abide by the Chromeria's laws. For generations they've sent discipuli to the Chromeria, taken all the education they can get, then failed out on purpose so their contracts could be bought out cheaply. They've even trained with the Blackguard, abusing your trust and stealing possessions and funds.
Kip should have been thinking about whether he could bring together ancient enemies without losing everyone. Instead, he thought about the Blackguard and its old discrimination against anyone not Parian or Elishan, first justified because they were the peoples with the darkest skin, a justification made flimsier with every mixing generation. Those old snubs must have made the Blood Foresters who became the Cunny War feel justified in stealing what training they could. You won't be fair to me. Fine, I'll take your training and leave. Those desertions would have then made the Parians and Elishans feel justified again. See, these people are untrustworthy. They aren't worthy of being blackguards. Every community is a gull gliding over a sea of spite, eager for carrion, all too ready to steal and all too quick to squawk when stolen from. Kip held up his hands and they all quieted. They actually listened to him as if he was a real leader.
Some things at the Chromeria are going to have to change, but we're in no position to change anything until we win. And to win, we need all the allies we can get. We're in a fight to the death. I'll pick up any sword I can.
Even if it cuts you, Conarthur said.
It must have come out louder than he'd meant, because he reddened. Orholm bless that light skin.
But he stood fast when he saw the others look at him, suddenly stubborn.
If it cuts the White King deeper? Absolutely. This isn't a time when we have the luxury to cast aside help. And I'll tell them the same thing when they raise the same objections about you.
The big muscles went rigid again and then slowly deflated. Or Hollum have mercy, but Conartha was big, his muscles and fiery body hair rippling with every move.
Shabiel, explain will casting. You have 4 minutes.
And, with remarkable concision, she did. The peoples of the deep woods had been will casting for millennia, and, perhaps affected by the great river itself, they had always conceived of magic in dichotomies, drafting without casting one's will into the world, making one river, and will-casting making another. Down the will-casting river was another fork, will-casting into the soulless, and will-casting into the souled, then will-casting into the simple-souled, small animals mainly, and into complex souls, larger animals and humans, then will-casting into animals' souls and into human souls, and so forth. The first kind of will-casting, into objects, Luxon usually, was considered safe and almost mundane. It was tiring and usually short-lived, but a drafter archer might cast a bit of Luxon into the fletching of her arrow and then fix her will upon a target. When released, the arrow would curve to some small extent, seeking its target automatically. These weren't dramatic effects. The core physics of an arrow's flight and momentum were still the same. One couldn't shoot an arrow and have it curve back to hit someone behind you, but a skilled will caster might curve an arrow a bit over a wall to hit someone taking cover behind it. Or, if she possessed greater skill, she might focus on a difficult target and be able to shoot more accurately than her own mundane skills ought to allow. Holy shit, Kip thought. He'd heard of that in the Blackguard itself. Some of the Nunks had sworn they'd seen some of the best archers like Buskin and Tugertant shoot arrows that curved in midair. No wonder they'd been quiet about doing it. It was utterly forbidden. No wonder they'd done it anyway. It worked. This kind of magic was exhausting, Shabiel said, and it usually expired within seconds or hours of being separated from the caster. They could make simple machines, too, hidden traps whose trigger was something like, if touched, ignite. The far more dangerous will casting was into the souled. Whenever they could, they didn't allow their will-casters to start learning it until they were at least 30 years old, when they had a stake in their community, when they had families, when they had reasons not to go mad. The simple-souled could be given only relatively simple instructions. Go to this place, or maybe go to this place and do this. This, Kip realized, was what his father Gavin had done at the Gargantua. He had sent a rat to find the floating fortress's powder magazine. The height of the will-caster's art was working with creatures with greater intelligence, the complex souls, as they called them, the wolves and dolphins and horses and elephants and jungle cats. And bears, Kip guessed. Motherfucker.
Yes, bears.
Conartha gestured to a nearby skimmer to come closer. He turned to Shabiel after he hopped gracefully onto the moving deck of the other boat.
Tell him about it. Go on. I don't want to hear it. But he needs to know.
Con? Kip asked, as the other skimmer separated once more.
Conartha communes with a giant grizzly, Shabiel said quietly, looking at the big man's back.
A giant grizzly, in case a regular old grizzly wasn't terrifying enough.
I thought the last of those died long ago, he said. There are a few left. The deep forest remembers, Lord Gael.
Wonderful.
Tell me about the dangers, Kip said. With the lower forms of will casting, we're not sure why. It doesn't sap people of their will like the Chromeria believes. Instead, it seems to slowly eat away at their intelligence. We think sometimes the caster forgets to breathe while his will is elsewhere, and his body dies a little. He might come back to himself, but never really be the same. It's a death by slow degrees. As there are few old drafters, there are few old will casters.
And as with drafters who go white, there are the reckless among will-casters, too, Tisis added. She'd been quiet until now. There are men and women who believe they are wrongly sold, that they are, deep down, wolves or bears, or tiger wolves.
And what happens to them? Kip asked.
Most madness shows up early, Shabiel said. It's part of why we don't teach will-casting to the young. They get themselves killed. mauled by wild animals usually, or starved. A man is body and soul, and those who separate the two for long do it to their grief.
So if you're controlling an animal, and it gets killed, what then? Kip asked. She glanced at the con over on his other boat.
Sometimes nothing. Sometimes the caster is made an idiot. Sometimes she simply dies too. It depends how intricated the caster is.
Intricated?
Polychromes can more fully take on their host's body. The different colours connect differently.
Let me guess, Kip said, stomach sinking. Superviolet to understand the thoughts, blue to see and remember, green to feel and to sense how the body should move, yellow to hear and hold the balance of man and animal, orange to smell and process what an animal smells, red to taste and feel the emotions, and sub-red for the passions and the other animal senses a man doesn't share.
Shabeel looked at Kip as if he were a rock trout who had just beached himself and started lecturing her on eudaimonic theology.
How? Lucky guess, Kip said.
The cards.
It was the same as the cards. So will casting was, deep down, connected to the same magical reality that chromaturgy was. It was simply understood differently. All magic worked by certain laws, but no one knew them all. But Shabeel wasn't ready to let go of it.
I would have expected someone who had read up on will casting to say blue for sight, green for touch and so forth, probably forgetting sub-red and super-violet. But the secondary connections are not widely known. And you've shown no other knowledge of will casting. Have you been pretending ignorance of all this? Trying to trap me in a lie?
No. We don't have time to quibble now, Kip said. What happens if the man is killed while he's controlling the animal?
No. How did you know about the colour's connections? Shabeel insisted.
Kip said nothing, and they stood eye to eye. Or more accurately, eye to belly, but the pygmy didn't let the height differential affect her in the least. She was flushing, skin turning bluer by the moment.
Lord Guile sometimes just understands things about magic, Tysus said, trying to spread oil on the waters. He's kind of irritating that way.
Shabeel went silent, and her grinning mouth threw Kip. He was still learning to look around the corners of her eyes and to ignore the mouth.
Con Ruachan Arthur's twin, Ronan, was killed while he was fully intricated in his bear not 2 months past. Ruachan had to go kill the bear himself, the animal that held the last living remnants of Ronan's soul. It tore Ruachan's heart out to kill it, but kill it he did.
And what happens if you don't kill the animal? Kip asked.
Kip, Tysus scolded. I have to know, he said. It goes mad. Tries to return to its people, its human people. But the magic fades, and it reverts to animal, and the man's soul dies at last. But all too often it gets violent, for it's been changed, been violated. They kill people. We have many stories of attempts to save the soul trapped, Lord Guile. None of them end happily.
The Briseid? Tysus asked. Tamar and Heraklos?
Indeed, though perhaps told quite differently than you remember. The Chromeria has ways of crushing knowledge, but some truth always leaks out.
Not the seven lives of Maeve Hart? Tysus asked.
That, too, Shabeel admitted uneasily.
No wonder the Chromeria forbids it, Tysus said.
What's that? Kip asked. He'd only heard of the last one.
Briefly. Tysus said, a woman flings her soul into a heart and flees when soldiers storm her home and burn it to the ground, killing her body. Her husband, Black Ed, hunts the men to their homes one at a time and murders their wives and puts his Maeve's soul in their bodies. But it never works, because every woman already has her own soul, so he slowly loses her, her soul slipping away, until he comes to the queen herself, who had ordered the burning. And with her body, the magic works, or seems to work, for she is soulless. But one night he has a foul dream, and on seeing his enemy's face leering over him, shaking him, he strangles her, and upon seeing what he's done, he kills himself, throwing his spirit into the stones of the old castle. He haunts it to this day.
Lovely, Kip said. I can't wait to hear more uplifting tales from your homeland.
The story is actually,
Somewhat darker even than that, Shabeel said, but that's beside the point.
I agree, Kip said, not willing to answer more questions which she seemed poised to ask. He wasn't telling her about the cards.
So it seems like, to put it in your dichotomies, we're talking about two different things, will casting and...
what?
Soul casting.
Shabeel looked up the river.
Do we really have time for this?
I'm afraid we don't have time not to do this, Kip said.
Have you not read The Philosopher? Before you understand anything, you must understand physics, what is in the corporeal world. Upon that you build your understanding of the metaphysics, what is beyond the simple corporeal, emotions and thoughts and so forth. From those two you derive your ethics, how one is to act properly in accord with the facts. Above that, politics, how bodies of individuals are to act toward each other, and then rhetoric, and the arts, the poetics. We and the Cromeria disagree about our metaphysics. It affects everything above it. If, as they believe, you tear off a piece of your soul when you will cast, you're doing fundamental harm to yourself every time you do this magic. It would be akin to magic powered by murdering someone. It wouldn't matter if you did good with the magic, because at base, the action empowering that good is itself evil. Thus, the good we do, they discount, whilst every ill effect that comes from our magic, they say, obviously springs from the corrupted nature of the whole. We can't win, because we argue politics, the regulation of magics, when our dispute is about metaphysics. This is very complicated, Tysis said.
Not really, Shabeel said. We say the will is the breath of the soul. Like your body needs breath and will die without it, your soul needs will. But we can inspire an animal, literally in-breathe, to do something. Of course we need to recover afterward, like you need to inhale every time you exhale, like you breathe hard after running. You need recovery time. And yes, if you go too long without breathing, you die. Or if you deprive another person of their breath, it's killing. This is murder if it's a person. But the animals we inspire can also be killed thus, if it's done wantonly or clumsily or for too long. And we regard that as a serious offence too. Will casting with the higher souled is a profound partnership, and the animals we partner can tell if it is done with violent or disrespectful intent. And the will caster feels their terror too if the partnering is done poorly or meanly. We know and love our hosts to a degree that one who has never will cast cannot fathom. Soul casting is different, forbidden. Soul casting is when the soul of an animal is blotted out and replaced. Its body may live for days afterward, but its vital spark is extinguished. It damages the caster too in more insidious ways.
It can be done to men?
She nodded grimly.
Which is why to us soul casting is a black magic. Damned magic, always forbidden, always disastrous. As the stories of the living dead and of wolfmen tell. Loathed and despised.
And mostly moot, because only a full-spectrum polychrome can soul-cast, Kip said. It was partly a guess. She looked stung.
That's right.
Ruahan and his twin Ronan. Full-spectrum polychromes, he guessed.
Yes.
And Ronan soul-cast himself.
She licked her lips with a small blue tongue.
While dying...
Doubtless it is a unique temptation for those with such great power.
And now you know Ruachan's shame.
No, Kip said. Now I know why he swore fealty to me instead of taking the lead himself.
The big man had the respect of his people and the intellect and fierceness to lead, but at the word of some prophet, he had given up the lead and sworn himself to Kip? Why would a man do that?
Kip had only hatred for his own half-brother, but he'd seen what a big-hearted man will give for his brother, and he said a silent thanks to Tremble Fist and Iron Fist for that. For here, though different in culture and colour and circumstances, he saw a mirror of their love. And what Tremble Fist had taught him might just save his life. Why would Con Arthur not lead? Not because he was ashamed of his brother who had done something desperate as he died. There was little shame in that. Con Arthur wouldn't lead. Because he was ashamed of himself. Because there was no way in hell he'd kill Ronan's bear, Lorcan. Because that would have meant killing his brother. Ronan was out there somewhere, trapped and going mad in the body of that bear, and nothing could stop him but death.
Conarthur bore the responsibility to his people and to his brother to kill the animal, but that would mean admitting Ronan was dead. It would mean killing the last remnant of his brother with his own hands. His love was his shame, but if he wouldn't confront that on his own, Kit was going to have to make him do so before someone got killed. But how do you reveal a man's deepest, secret shame, accuse him of heresy and cowardice, and not destroy him? A commander couldn't. Maybe a friend could. Kip had to give Conarthur time to deal with it, had to pray the forest was big enough for one crazed grizzly. Time was up. The island was coming into view.
"What are you going to do?"
Shabeel asked. It all seemed abstract, a philosophical difference about the best uses of magic. That was until the skimmers beached on the island, and Kip saw the sudden fear in the Cooney Wars men's eyes at the sight of Shabeel and at their sudden comprehension of who these people were. The Cooney War, these hardened magic-using warriors, were terrified of the Willcasters. Terrified through ignorance, partly, sure, but when you live in the forest and you know the creatures there well, how scary is the idea of someone who can turn any one of those creatures against you, with the capabilities of the animal but the mind of a human? How terrifying is it that a person might take over your own body? How terrifying is it to actually meet the kind of people responsible for all the tales of the living dead and wolfmen, and worse? To them, the name ghosts wasn't a sarcastic reference to how ephemeral and helpless these homeless, bereaved wanderers were. To them, the ghosts haunted the darkness of the forest, ready to turn nature or even your fellow man or your dead against you. But trained warrior drafters were scary too, and these Cooney War were in bad shape, whether they knew it or not. They'd been freed from death or servitude, but they'd lost two precious things, their confidence and their honor. They'd lost their confidence in being betrayed and captured and needing to be rescued, and they'd lost their honor in pursuing a separate peace with the White King. A soldier without confidence and honor is a breath away from becoming a brigand or gangster. But it had always been a fool's dream. Kip leading men to destroy the White King himself? These two camps were like lodestones pushing against each other invisibly, endlessly. Ergo, just flip one, they'll fuse themselves together. Right? Kip stepped ashore without a word, without so much as a nod at the men standing there to ask him a question. Drafting green from 1,000 trees shining on each bank of the river in the noonday sun, he threw down steps and made a small platform to stand on. "We," he declared, "are damaged, but not dismayed, oppressed, but not overwhelmed. We are the broken, for when our oaths were tested, we broke them and ourselves. We were the despised. Here are my best friends. This world sees a bastard, an orphan, a hostage, a cripple, an idiot. I call them the mighty. We, you, are outcasts all, the homeless driven from the lands where our mothers were buried. They have taken the light from our lives, killed our loved ones, our friends, taken our homes, left us to wander as ghosts and feral dogs." He didn't remember, afterward, much of what he said after that. He was looking at the faces, watching how they moved, the little twitches of expression. A man's face is the surface of a pond, reflecting the sky, reflecting the trees, reflecting whatever is the object of his gaze and his love, the reflection hiding his depths. But when a wave passes in the swell for an instant, you can see what lies beneath the waters. Their ears listened to his words, but their hearts inclined to the sincerity of his soul, deep calling unto deep. "We have lost, but we are not lost. We have failed," he told them, "but we can do better. We can be forgiven. We can make things new. This is not the end for us." "They have taken the light from us, yes, but now they expect us to cower like dogs beaten and fade like shades forgotten. But I don't see dogs and shades here. Do they not know what they've begun? I see wolves. I see ghosts." He looked around at them as if they had forgotten who they were, and he was here to hold up a mirror for them that they might remember. "Have you forgotten? Have they made you for this brief hour forget? Ghosts and wolves hunt at night. They think we cower, waiting for the light.
Alone we are broken, bereaved, afraid. Together we are strong. Together we will hunt. In darkness we will usher them into the final darkness. Alone we were weak and frightened. That time is past. Together, today, we are the night bringers. It ended with cheers and tears, and not a single accusation that this person or that was disloyal or heretical or dangerous. Somehow it ended with 120 will casters, 230 Cuaní Mhuir, and 200 civilians swearing fealty to Kip. And Kip's fool dream that he might destroy the White King was like a babe stillborn, lying pallid and cold in his hands, taking sudden breath, stirring, squalling. Thus was born his army.